But yeah, 13 weeks today. We were just chatting before the camera clicked on, so we figured we'd turn it on. Yeah, 13 weeks post total hip replacement and a power snatch today, light, but in my first time for a workout and pain free. And so, yeah, it's a got nothing some Olympic lifting. You know, I figured
nothing
you'd be
over 100 kilos, right, Pat?
No. Yeah. Oh my goodness. But anyway, Chad, welcome, brother, man. We're super stoked to have you here and kind of chat all things weightlifting.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So, you know, a little bit, you know, we'll put your full credentials in like the show notes and whatnot. People can check that out. But I mean, you know, probably the thing that jumps out at everybody is, you know, two-time Olympian. That's not usually on most people's resume. So
right.
If somebody like wanted to become an Olympian, how do they do that?
Oh, you really want to ask me that question? maybe I should have said, let's stay away from that question.
We'll start with the low ball question.
Yeah,
you know,
we'll work our way up. I was looking at your age. So you were born in 1980, right?
1980, yeah.
Okay. I was born in 75. So, you know, rough ballpark as yourself. I don't remember anywhere that I grew up anyone mentioning the term weightlifting, seeing a snatch or a clean and jerk. What were your circumstances that crossed your path, and what age did that, you know, even get on your radar?
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about weightlifting specifically, how do you go to the Olympics for that? It's a little bit more widespread now, obviously, through CrossFit.
Sure.
So maybe you get into CrossFit first and that'll lead you into weightlifting. But yeah, for me, it was growing up in small town Oklahoma. I didn't know what a snatch or clean and jerk was until I was a sophomore in high school. And that was just by luck. You know, I lived in a little town that had about 1,500 people in it. Was lucky that this young strength coach moved in my sophomore year, and he was just learning the Olympic lifts as he was teaching them to us. And so we did them,
wow,
you know, during off season and a little bit during season through those next 3 years, sophomore, junior, and senior. And after football season, my senior year, he wanted to take me to a competition. So went to the competition in Dallas in January of 1998. Was my first one. And these guys from Spoon Barbell Club, which is the club that I still lift for to this day, really took me under their wing and just kept me going. So I just got lucky. I mean, if that young coach wouldn't have moved in and wouldn't have been open to the Olympic lifts, because not many people really was
right
before then. It was just bench, squat, and deadlift and agility drills, you know?
Yep.
That was it.
And was it something that it was kind of love at first sight? Like when you got introduced to these lifts and you started, excuse me, diving into them, was it like, okay, these are great, I can see myself pursuing these? Or did it kind of take a while to kind of grip you? Because, and I'll back up and say, you know, getting back to the first question, how do you become an Olympian with Olympic lifting, particularly in weightlifting? I mean, man, I can only imagine the repetition that's required for that. And if you don't truly love those lifts, I don't see how it's possible, right? So yeah, at some point you kind of have to fall in love with it. So
it sounds like the football team was doing them, but for some reason you stood out.
Yeah, I stood out. I took to them quickly. I picked them up quickly from what my coach knew to teach us. I was usually always the smallest kid on the football team, but I was one of the absolute strongest. But as far as them getting introduced, I never looked at it as love at first sight, but I guess it really kind of was. I never thought about it that way, but I did take to them quickly. I just enjoyed being in the weight room anyways, whether, you know, even before I knew what the Olympic lifts were, just doing whatever we were doing in there, even curls back in the day, all these curls I was doing back in the day. But yeah, I did take to them and pick them up quicker than most. And, you know, I did stand out enough to where my coach wanted to take me to that competition. So
you said that you were one of the smaller yet stronger athletes. Have you, you know, I know some guys that just work out sporadically and they're mysteriously strong at a level that doesn't make sense. Were you always kind of a strong kid, or did you, even before you get into the weight room for football, were you lifting in the basement with the Joe Weider weight set and the Schwarzenegger Encyclopedia Bodybuilding? You know, where did that come from initially?
No, I didn't have any of that. It was definitely just through sports in school. And I wouldn't say that I was freakishly strong or talented by any means. I mean, again, you're talking about this small the small town, you know, like, so yeah, I was stronger than, you know, close to as strong as some of the linemen were and stuff like that, as far as lifting goes. But, you know, to say that I was something extremely special, I'm not just being humble here, to say that I was something extremely special, when I look back on what I know now from being a coach in the CrossFit community and working with a lot of different kids and individuals through the years, and seeing the level of talent that we now have in USA weightlifting because of how much
exposure
has grown in popularity, there are some freaky people out there, you know. So I can safely say, obviously, I had a certain amount of ability. You know, I if I'm honest with myself, I would like to say, oh, I had no talent, I had nothing, and I was able to make it to the Olympics. I know that that's not true. You know, I had to have a certain level of ability combined with, you know, a certain level of dedication and relentlessness and all that stuff that led me to that place. But it's, yeah, there's just so many freaks out there.
But let's, you know, this might be a full show just on this, so you can give us maybe the cliff notes of it. But you go to that first meet during your high school years, you show promise from your, mm-hmm. your coach sees it and lifting clubs see it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that's you in high school. You head to the Olympics in 2004. So there's a good number of years between there. What does the road or path look like between then of developing proficiency and immersing yourself into that world? And does it become an all encompassing, like your whole world revolves around it? Or did it gradually be like, yeah, I am pretty good at this, I'll give it a bit more time. Yeah, this guy noticed me too. Okay, it's a bit more time. Or were you all in?
It was all in pretty quickly after that first competition. And again, meeting the guys from Spoon Barbell Club, Richard Fleming in particular was the coach's name that, you know, has been a mentor of mine ever since then and coached me for most of my career. I actually just ran into him a couple weeks ago and had a good conversation with him. But after that first competition, it was the Texas State Weightlifting Championships, and I won that competition, I guess, for my, I don't remember if it was for my age group or whatever, certainly the weight class. And, he saw enough in me where he was interested enough to send me programs. And, he drove to see me a couple times, and I would drive and stay with him through the next number of years on certain weekends. But, to age myself a little bit more, he initially had to send my programs through fax.
Yes, so
we didn't even know enough to send an email back then. So, you know, now you can just, you know, send it in a million different ways. But yeah, I finished out my high school year I ran track. And as I was still lifting a little bit on the side, I think I did do another competition. Actually, the day after prom, I did my second competition. So I remember being a good boy, specifically trying to be a good boy that night, make sure that I could go do what I needed to do. So I did take to the dedication part to it pretty quickly. And as soon as I graduated that summer afterwards, it was, you know, my dad helped me build a platform underneath our carport that was leveled and re-leveled by us picking it up and scooping more rocks up under.
That's awesome.
Can you imagine how much the underside of that was beat up? But I had this cheap Walmart squat rack that I squatted on, and this old bar that didn't spin at all that Richard brought one time that he came and he let me borrow some of his weights. And
I love
actually
that.
Before I had that platform under the carport, I would do squat sessions out in the backyard, and I had two fold out tables with two fold out chairs on top, and then I set the set the weights in there. So I was getting the work done, but I got really strong through that first year under the carport. And then we finally built the shed that my dad had always wanted anyway. And he kind of used me as an excuse to be able to get it and moved everything. I had a concrete floor by then, but I spent many years, or at least a couple years in that shed as well. And yeah, it was all encompassing. Like I was in college and I was working a part-time job, but all of that schedule was planned around my workouts, what I needed to do for my workouts and all that stuff.
And most of your friends must not have had any darn idea what you were talking about. Because if you're like, I'm going to go and lift, they're like, oh, you're going to hit some like dumbbell kickbacks. And so you're like, no, I do these lifts. And they're like, you do what? But what I'd be curious about is, so I'm going to assume, correct me if I'm wrong, you love it, you're all in, you're training your tail off, you're getting great programming from somebody who knows what they're doing. You're probably continuing to show up to various levels of competition and get exposure in that. At what level of competition or at what progression in your journey did it either click in your head or one of your mentors mentioned that first word of like, hey, you keep doing what you're doing, you might actually like be able to represent your country on the world stage, like said the Olympics word. Like that's a unique thing. Do you remember when that first crossed your radar?
I remember the first time that maybe it was said to me before, I don't remember, but I remember the first time I took it in, and it was actually with Richard underneath that carport. We were doing a workout. I think it was probably something like six sets of six at 80%, and the back squat was part of that workout, and you know, some snatches and clean and jerks too. And I remember him saying, you know, if you do this and that and this and that, you could make it to the Olympics someday. So he didn't say, what I really remember from that is he didn't say you're going to. He said, if you do these certain things, you can make it. And it stuck in my head, obviously, but it was also a little bit in one ear and out the other. I definitely didn't fully believe it at that time. But it was enough to keep me going. I mean, you know, I loved lifting anyways, and I probably would have kept going. And I was definitely getting stronger and lifting more weight and making more noise at the competitions that I was going to. But I was doing that at that time, with freedom from worrying about really how well I was doing, and freedom from like having to make it to the Olympics and having to do this and to do that. And I think that's what allowed me to compete as well as I was competing at that time, looking back, because there just wasn't near as much pressure.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love that your setup was so bare bones.
Absolutely. You know,
I think it's really interesting that I, in my opinion, I think that programs kind of follow that mentality too. You have some programs that are pretty bare bones, and the equipment profile kind of follows that. And the attitude around what do you actually need to be successful can follow around that. And then I think there's the opposite end too, where people can convince themselves that if only I had these bells and whistles, if only I had this in my training hall, you know, I could add a couple more pounds to my total and I'd be in better shape. Like, did you ever feel at that time that you were shortchanged by the equipment that you had or didn't have access to? Or was that not even a factor because it was just, hey, the work is what's the important part. And if I'm going to move forward in this, it doesn't really matter where my gear is coming from. Did any of that kind of enter into your head at that point in your training?
I really didn't know any better whatsoever. It didn't matter. I mean, what mattered to me is I enjoyed working. I still enjoy working. That's why I love CrossFit so much. I still do CrossFit on a fairly regular basis now, but I'm still working out most every day, and that's always just been so easy for me. I know it's not easy for everybody. I feel lucky now that I know as a coach, and I see all these people struggling to get into the gym and everything else. And like, it is easy for me to make the time. Like, I feel like I kind of have to stay mentally, you know, with it and healthy and everything else. But no, it wasn't, none of that was a concern to me, and it's not now either. It really bothers me when people think that. And in fact, as a coach, like I really feel like athletes should earn certain pieces of equipment because I think it makes them stronger, one, and like they need to have a little bit more respect for it. So jerk blocks, for example, I didn't have jerk blocks until I don't even remember the first time I used jerk blocks, but I did do jerks out of the rack. So how did I have to do it? I either had to dump it and unload it and clean it and put it on the rack, or I had to learn to catch it on myself. And looking back on that, I now realize how many heavy max, literally max jerks that I made and that I lowered back down so I didn't have to dump it and unload and then clean it and put it back on the rack. how many extra reps did I get in cushioning blow? You know, like that's a part of why I say it's a respect thing, but it's also like you need to earn these jerk blocks because you need to one, learn to catch the weight on yourself safely and get that extra eccentric work in there, like where you're catching it. Like I know I got some extra strength and power from that.
You know, regardless of your sport, whether it's weightlifting, basketball, you fill in the blank. You know, I think one of the big things that separates the recreational pursuit from the professional pursuit is having to do it under pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I had no pressure, I might be able to throw a halfway decent pitch somewhere in the neighborhood of home plate. If you filled the stands and you told me I was going to throw out the first ball, I would whiff it into left field. Like it would be terrible. So like somehow along your path, you said your life was good, you know, pressure's kind of low, doing it for fun, life's cool, you don't have to compare yourself to anyone on Instagram, it's a good time to be alive. But then, you know, I'm sure you advance in years, the competitions, the stakes raise, that little O word of Olympics maybe gets set a second time, you see the reality, and I would assume at some point in time, the pressure is felt, you know, and the individuals who can go and do something technically complicated in a high stress situation with a bunch of people watching them and under judgment, like that's a different deal than just hitting the weight in your garage with your favorite music on. Your ability to perform the world's most complicated lifts at max effort in those situations, did you slowly develop? And I guess my question is, how did you find a way to successfully navigate that pressure when the lights came on? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was definitely tough. I in the beginning, I was lucky that I was a natural competitor. I really wasn't. I really didn't. I wouldn't say that I really knew how to focus through a lift the optimal way, the way that I feel like I do now, and I teach others to do. I was just getting strong, and I was just being tough. I was tough enough to make the lifts. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know necessarily what I was doing, but I was making most of my lifts and I was starting to get on the medal stand and starting to win more and more competitions and that kind of thing. And then had a competition that initiated a pretty long slump for me. It was the World Championships in 2003. I think it was my first World Championships, but it was big. It was a big deal because we had to earn points. Each individual had to try to earn points to collect with the other team members, and that would place you your team. And so I think number 21 through 27 as a team got 3 spots, and we're behind the rest of the world, so that's kind of what we're aiming for, and we needed a certain amount of points to do that. So every athlete mattered, and especially the ones that were in a position to be able to get points, and I was in a position to be able to get some. And I don't really remember even feeling pressure. I actually remember feeling confident, just like my normal self. I just come off of the 2003 Pan American Games where I won the gold medal, and even though I got, you know, sick enough to when I got back I had to go to the hospital, I still won that competition.
Oh wow!
And it was a big highlight. And so I was coming off of that. I felt good, but I missed all 3 snatches in the World Championships. Came back and did well in the clean and jerk. I made 2 clean and jerks. I matched my PR, so I felt good that I was able to make that comeback. But definitely after that, it knocked me down a little bit. And I started to question things, and I started to doubt. And I started to, looking back now, I can remember for years, my competitions were like, I would walk behind the bar, and before approaching the bar, I would basically just be desperate and begging, like, please don't miss this lift. Please don't miss this lift. And then I remember that going through my head as I'm grabbing the bar and lifting it from the ground. So I'm lucky that I have even made any of my lifts at that point, but I became less consistent, and I still, you know, ended up winning a certain number of national championships and other events under those circumstances. But looking
sounds
back
like
now,
you lost that confidence you had for a while.
Yeah. And it wasn't even, I wouldn't even say it was confidence that I had before. It was, I just didn't really know any better. Mm-hmm. I was just lifting, you know, but now coming out on the other side of that and having to figure out not only how to compete again, but how to compete better, how to do it better. You know, I know what I was doing before was more so getting lucky. And now I feel like I'm just good at what I do, you know, for like, I just became good at executing the snatch and clean and jerk under, it doesn't even matter what circumstance. It can be just by myself, in this dungeon gym that I love and work out in a lot now. Or it can be at the world championships in front of a certain number of people, or in the middle of a crowd at a CrossFit event or something like that. It doesn't even matter anymore, because it's just about executing the lift. I'm in my own mind and I'm feeling myself, and I'm executing and focusing in the way that I do, no matter what's going on. So, you know, I wish that I would have had that early in my career, and I wish that I would have had that through the highest point of my career, because I really didn't. I really didn't develop that and completely hone that until I was kind of a little bit on the downside. And then now as a master, I get to use that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about timeline. You know, you've alluded to this a little bit already, but, you know, coming up at the time that you did, you talked about how Olympic lifting wasn't really widespread in the United States, at least not outside of a couple of pockets of kind of physical culture. CrossFit is kind of interesting in the sense that, you know, I think CrossFit really kind of started coming to prominence, I would say, in the late 2000s, you know, kind of 2008 to 2012, I think, is when things really started to accelerate. And so having been a part of competitive weightlifting kind of pre-CrossFit being a public kind of known entity to now where CrossFit is obviously pretty well known, you know, just in your estimation, what impact has that had on weightlifting in the United States or North America more broadly?
It's so much. I'm having a hard time even putting it into words. I wish that I would have thought to pull these numbers up, because and they're probably maybe a little bit different now, but I've been in the process of writing a book, of course, on weightlifting for a number of years now. And one of the things that I did was I was trying to express the popularity of weightlifting, the growth of weightlifting from a certain time to another. And, you know, I attribute that to CrossFit, of course. Like nobody can say any different. If it wasn't for CrossFit, we'd still be, I mean, probably would still have the same membership numbers, but maybe I can send you these numbers when I have time to look them up to remember what they were. But it was, you know, what they were back in the late 90s and the early 2000s versus what they were in 2015, for example, versus what they were in 2020. And now, you know, I don't even know what they are now, but, you know, and I did that for CrossFit affiliates too. And I kind of made those comparisons to see the growth of CrossFit and the growth of, specifically USA Weightlifting, the membership of USA Weightlifting. And it was just exponential. It was just exponential. And again, now I would say that every weightlifting Olympian, and I can't say this with 100% certainty, but I did look at this too. Every weightlifting Olympian, or most of them by and far, in 2020 or 2021 and 2016, they were introduced into weightlifting because of CrossFit.
Oh, wow.
That's fascinating.
In some way, whether their parents were into CrossFit or, you know, they started at a CrossFit gym, in some way they were introduced into it. You know, they're just Matty Rogers, Harrison Morris, both Olympians in the last Olympics. And, you know, their stories are from CrossFit. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting. Pat and I, that's another thing we talk about a lot, is just, you know, the trajectory of availability of equipment. You talk about your kind of humble beginnings with the carports and the homemade platform. I mean, I have similar, obviously my athletic career is not even close to what you've achieved, but I remember making my own kettlebells back in the day. I remember scraping together various rusty pieces of equipment you know, old barbells and squat racks that we made out of old tire racks at old San Francisco CrossFit, you know, sleds that we welded together out of various pieces of metal that we probably shouldn't have because they weren't that safe. But at the end of the day, there just was not, the same kind of commercial availability. I mean, I even remember trying to track down a pair of bumper plates was next to impossible, you know, in the early 2000s. That was just not something that you could go out and purchase very easily. So it is really interesting to me to see how kind of snowballed some of these other aspects of physical culture have become. And it is interesting to me that weightlifting seems to be the one that's benefited so much from CrossFit. Like, I don't think powerlifting has had quite the same bump, you know, or gymnastics or other sports. So it is kind of, it's curious to me why weightlifting seemed to have benefited from that so much.
Yeah, people love the Olympic lifts, man. They adore them. And you're right. I mean, I know so many people that exactly that, like, dabbled in CrossFit, found all this stuff, and now, like, whether they stuck with it for the rest of their lives or not, took a detour and, like, just Olympic lifted for a year, two or more, and then maybe circled back. So there's a lot of people listening or watching to the show that, you know, are largely fitness enthusiasts, CrossFitters, mixed modality, whatever you want to call it, you know, and they're pretty familiar with what a typical day, week, or month of fitness CrossFit programming looks like every day. What can you walk us through, like, maybe there isn't a typical, but, like, for lack of a better way to say it, like, what's a typical training day look like for an Olympic lifter? How long are you in the gym? How many sets? Or, like, what kind of volume are you talking about? How frequently would you max out? Like, are there some rough kind of just guidelines you can give us to kind of help inform people?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from my experience and what got me to where I was going, but I wanted to backtrack and make a comment on the equipment that you were talking about, because I remember probably around about in 1999 trying to buy some more plates because some of the plates that Richard had let me borrow were breaking down and everything else. And it was a process. It was a nightmare. It took us, like, calling different people. And I mean, Richard helped us to know who to call and everything else like that. But we ended up buying some of the cheaper ones that we could find. And they came in and they weren't incredibly well made. And, you know, the biggest weight weighed like, one of them weighed like probably 2 or 3 kilos more than the other one. Amazing. So I was always having to add extra weight to
compensate
to the other side, but it took forever to get them in. And to even get a pair of weightlifting shoes back then, you had to call this one guy who was the only distributor in the US, and like, it just took forever, and you know, you couldn't try them on or anything else like that. So it's just an interesting part, and it's such a huge difference of course. And now we're all aging ourselves again, but it doesn't really seem like that long ago.
Definitely. Now people have arguments about, you know, oh, this plate, the density of it is so superior to this plate. And
yeah,
get people falling down these rabbit holes of
this one bounces better like or that. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. All these different shoes too. But I would say through the highest volume portion of my career, which it, maybe we'll come back to this, but I wish I would have done less sooner. Let me just put it that way.
Interesting.
But I was doing 6 to 9 workouts a week. And so, of course, if there's 9 workouts in there, that means 2 or 3 of those days are going to have multiple sessions in them. I think there was a time where I was doing more than that. We were doing what's called the Americanized Bulgarian program. And basically what that is mostly is just heavy snatch, heavy clean and jerk, and heavy front squat on all or just about every session that you do. I even had workouts where we would do max front squat, max clean and jerk, max snatch, max clean and jerk, max front squat, and then max clean and jerk and max snatch again. So
every day?
Well, no, not every day, but there were certain workouts like
that. Okay, gotcha, okay.
But yeah, so if there were multiple days, you know, usually it was one snatch, one clean and jerk, one squat. There was very little deadlifts or pulls in that program even, so because you were just snatching and clean and jerking so often. But it was, you know, I did that for a few different cycles back when I was 19 and 20 years old, where when I was able to kind of get away with it. And I did benefit from it. My body did take to it. I think a lot of that has to do with because I came in as a pretty balanced athlete. I really didn't have any, you know, glaring strengths or weaknesses. I was overall balanced and I moved well, had good mobility. So that allowed me to sustain that volume level. And I think that's where a lot of athletes that try to do weightlifting programs or even CrossFit get into trouble is when they don't take the time to really see what their body, what their body is kind of made up of. Meaning like, do I need more mobility? Am I like really strong in my upper body, but weak in my lower body? Or am I really strong interior and weak posterior? Whatever that imbalance may be, you're feeding into your movement. And if there's compensation there, I hate to threaten people with injury. I don't ever do that because I really feel like people that are immobile and unbalanced, or just, you just move shitty. There's a chance that you're not ever going to get injured. I mean, that's just, you know, there's no, we can't guarantee that,
sure,
but you just have a higher probability and you're going to limit yourself as an athlete if you're looking for performance. So I was lucky in that I had those things that allowed me to be that quote unquote workhorse and just, you know, bang my head against the wall and come out on the other side stronger, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
With that, I did do a lot of different programs too, but that one was, you know, one of those, you know, probably 9 workouts a week. And then there were others that were more, a little less frequent with the Olympic lift specifically, but still 6 to 9 workouts a week. And now we're talking about getting into more specific strength programs. Like for example, I said 6 sets of 6 at 85% earlier. Well, that squat program is you build into that through weeks. So for example, on day one would be 6 sets of 2 at 80%. And then we would maybe throw a day 2 in there that would be kind of lighter front squats for more for speed. And then day 3 of the squat program would be 6 sets of 2 at 80% on week 1. The only change to that program every week was going up a rep on day 3 of the squat program. And then, you know, maybe we throw a light week in there and then we go back down. Now we go 85% for 5 sets of 5, 90% for 4 sets of 4. So now we're trying to build up and weight as we're bringing those reps down. And so that squat program is lasting a good couple of months, but you're always doing 6 sets of 2 at 80% on your off day, kind of the control day, and a light front squat day. And so anyway, just different. That's just one example of many different squat programs that, you know, either Richard would throw in, and then we would plan everything else around that base program. So that any deadlifts, any presses, any Olympic lifts are going to be programmed around that specific squat program until we get out of that and we get into more of a competition phase where we need to now put a certain number of Olympic lifts in there, heavy Olympic lifts, and then we program everything else around that. So I learned to program from Richard, but I did ultimately end up programming for myself for most of my career, which worked out in the end mostly pretty good, although I did make a lot of mistakes and overworked myself a good number of times. But
amen.
But I did learn a lot.
I got one follow-up question to that, Boz, then
then
you can run where you want to run. So that was like a, you know, day of training, roughly speaking, or a week for the dedicated Olympic lifter, right? Not the fitness enthusiast. This is your life, is getting better at the snatch and the clean and jerk. With your astonishing knowledge of that, and also how much you know about CrossFit, do you have general guidance you give to somebody as to where do the Olympic lifts fit into the CrossFitter's life? Like how somebody, that was one extreme that you just said, where do you see the snatch and the clean and jerk benefiting just the recreational dad looking to be fit and healthy on planet Earth? You know, where's that happy balance?
Well, I do work with a lot of athletes that love CrossFit and still do CrossFit. So I program for them, and you know, whether I watch their videos and help them in that way or not, it's always about, okay, what are your goals? How much CrossFit are you doing? You want to move better. You want to lift more weight. Usually they want to move better and lift more weight in the snatch and the clean and jerk.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how much CrossFit they're doing or, you know, how much they want to do, how much time they have to do CrossFit in combination with any weightlifting that I would give them. I like for people to do at least 3 days, at least three dedicated days of weightlifting work on a just mostly a, what I would call a complete weightlifting program, a complete 3 day a week weightlifting program, and then try to help them put CrossFit where I think it's best or where they can. What I've found is that it doesn't have to be too complicated. It doesn't have to be like too, like, hey, let's don't do this in your CrossFit workout because you're doing this in your weightlifting program the next day. Not necessarily, especially for those people that are just, they're trying to get more reps and understanding in the Olympic lifts. Like, we don't have to overcomplicate it that much. Now, if you're going to compete, but you still want to do CrossFit, maybe we might make some adjustments. Maybe I might make some recommendations on the last couple of weeks, but CrossFit is just so powerful. When you get conditioned to it, like you guys know, you become, I want to say you become a little bit superhuman. I will tell you that I recover better from my weightlifting workouts, and don't get me wrong, I'm still not extremely conditioned. I still breathe hard. I still breathe very hard, faster than most people do when I do CrossFit, and I do a lot. But I feel like I recover better because of the CrossFit that I've done. And so when I'm on a weightlifting program and I'm training for whatever master's competition I'm training for, I still do CrossFit all the time. Like, it's a part of my program.
And so would you say the people that you work with are people who adore weightlifting and they want to have a more of a bias towards weightlifting, but I'm also working in some CrossFit as well. But my bread and butter is love the clean and jerk and the snatch, and let's bump those suckers up.
It's dependent. I mean, I have different levels. I have some people that's what they want, at least temporarily, to try to, you know, stimulate some growth in the Olympic lifts in whatever way. Or I have people that are like, you know what, I do CrossFit and I'm not going to stop, and I wouldn't ask them to anyway. You know, and I do it at this level and I don't really want to back down from that. So how can you help me? And I'll figure out a way to help them work that in.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you mentioned a while back, which was, I wish I would have known to do less earlier. And I'm really curious about that, because I have heard that recently from some high level CrossFit athletes. And I'm not going to name who they are, but this is a theme that I think has come up. As CrossFit's a young sport, figuring out the best way to train for it, I think, is still very much an experiment for a lot of people. And I think we've kind of gone through a couple different eras. We went through the very early era where everybody's just kind of figuring this thing out. What is it? How do I even do it at all? And then, you know, we went through kind of this high volume era, which I think we're starting to come out of, in my opinion, which is a good thing. But I think that the type of athlete that has been attracted to high level CrossFit has been almost too tough for their own good, in the sense that they're hard workers, they're disciplined, and they have a high tolerance for a high volume program. And I think that leads them to convince themselves that they have to continue doing more. You're starting to see the backlash to that, where people are A, getting burned out, or B, just coming to the realization that, like, hey, maybe I don't need to do that extra session, and it's not actually moving the needle forward. But I'm always curious, because to me, it's a kind of a chicken and egg question. In the beginning, you know, it's one thing to, well, let me fast forward. It's one thing to say now with the hindsight that you have, hey, I wish I would have trained less.
Yeah.
But do you think you would have gotten to the same level if you hadn't gone through that period of high volume and kind of pushed the threshold at that time of your life? Do you know what I mean?
You're absolutely right, because the mindset that I feel like I had and those elite athletes have is something that you have to have. You're not going to make it through the training that you need to make it through to get as strong as you need to get and move as well as you need to move and do all the things that you need to do without that. You can't be shy about it. You've got to be aggressive. You can't just, you know, hey, let me start with 2 days a week and see how that goes and then build in. I mean,
Maybe I'll make it to the top.
you can't really do that. And looking back, I understand that. And I do say, I wish I would have done less more all the time. And I've thought about this a lot and talked about it with a number of different people too. because for me to be at the point that I am now, just for example, even as a master's athlete, I'm 43 years old right now, I can still handle a lot. I can do, you know, even CrossFit. I can do a shit ton of CrossFit and heavy Olympic lifting. And I'm not saying I do a tremendous amount and I just overdo it now, but I could do it and mostly get away with it. And it's because of the training that I did for all those years in Olympic lifting. And so now if I do a 3-day a week weightlifting program, I really don't even have to pay that much of attention. I mean, I do, don't get me wrong. I pay attention and I put my love into it, but I really don't have to pay attention as much to what I put in there or the percentage or anything like that, because I can get away with it because I'm conditioned. I move well, and I'm going to be able to recover from 3 days versus the 6 to 9 workouts that capacity that I built up for heavy lifting and heavy Olympic lifting for all those years. So I wouldn't change at least the first handful of years in my career, and probably even more than that, because I think that conditioned me. Well, one, I was improving, so why would I have done anything different anyway?
Yep.
But at the point where I started struggling, I should have stopped and said, okay, what's going on? You know, what are you doing wrong? Do you need to do anything different? You know, do you need to do a different type of programming, or do you need to do less? And I remember now, this is coming to my mind, and this comes back to me in my memory every now and then. I remember a mentor of mine, he's been a coach of mine on many international trips, Leo Totten. And one time he said, what are you doing in your program? I told him this and this, you know, it's always 6 days a week or whatever, no matter what, it's at this level. You know, and I did get to the point in my career when I was programming for myself where I learned to take some back off weeks, and that was made a huge difference. And allowed me to keep climbing a little bit. But he said, you know what? Some days or some weeks you need to be doing 4 days instead of 6. And I heard him, it went into my brain and it circled around there a couple times, but then it just went right out. I mean, it was in there enough to where I remember he said that. And I wish that I would have thought more about it at that time, because it was around about the time where I needed to probably start thinking about doing something different. And I could have even, you know, done the same number of workouts per week just to keep my sanity if I was doing something different, if I was doing more light days or more medium days and even lighter on my light weeks. Like I could have sustained that, you know, the number of days just to feed my addiction, because that's what I would have needed to do. But I really truly believe, looking back now, if I would have done less in some way sooner, years sooner, I would have lifted more weight. I really truly believe that. Because after the 2008 Olympics, I was 28 in 2008. I took 6 months out of the gym.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was, I had never done that since I started working out. 6 months out of the gym. I didn't know what CrossFit was back then. I don't even remember how I occupied my time. I know I was doing some drinking, but which I'm not going to say I don't still do, but I was doing more than probably at any other point in my life. But 6 months out of the gym, I brought myself back to probably 95% on 3 days a week when I started through like that next year. And then I upped it to 4 days a week, and I ended up lifting my highest total ever at 31 years old.
Imagine so, that. Again, that's incredible.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, if I hadn't have gone through all those years of, you know, being used to that level of training and volume, I would not have been able to do what I did on 3 and 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. It's interesting.
I think that's one of the things that I think are going to be, you know, more and more conversations around that with higher level CrossFit athletes as the sport develops more. And I guess my biggest interest in that is just how it trickles down to the average person. Mm-hmm. You know, because in my opinion, I think that sometimes what they see as being necessary from the high end is not at all what's necessary for the regular person. That, like Pat said, you have somebody who just wants to be a great dad and be fit and, you know, be able to handle the business that life throws at them. That doesn't mean that they need to be doing 2 and 3 a day mm-hmm. style of training. So it'll be interesting to see where that shakes out as things continue. One thing I want to pick your brain about, Chad, is, you know, I've had the good fortune of being coached a little bit by you in person at Power Monkey Camp. Shout out to that. I mean, Power mm-hmm. Monkey's awesome. I encourage everybody to check that out. And one thing that really came across to me is just, you know, you're obviously a great lifter, a great athlete, but you're a great coach as well. And the patience that you have, the attention that you give to people, that's something that, you know, you can't fake that. It's a very, mm-hmm. very genuine thing. And yeah. so as your athletic career kind of progressed, at what point did you start to coach others? And at what point did you get interested in that? Because not all great athletes are great coaches. And,
true.
And quite often,
very true.
You see the opposite. You see somebody who takes to something naturally. They can't mm-hmm. explain it to another person. They can't impart it well. So at what point did you notice that, A, you enjoyed coaching, and B, you had an aptitude for it?
At what point I felt like I had an aptitude, I'll have to think about that. But I will say, initially, I never wanted to be a coach. And even now, I have a hard time with the few people that have actually called me coach. It doesn't sit well with me. I don't really want to be any, for whatever reason, like I don't really want to be anybody's coach. I love teaching. I love helping people get more mobile. I love helping people move better. That's what I do, work with online athletes all the time, which is mostly what I'm doing now. And so I'm watching their videos and that's what I'm doing. If they want me to
sounds
help
like
them,
a C word to me. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it is. Yes. I don't know why I have an issue with that, but I do. And I think it's because I've just given such a high level of respect to the coaches that I've called coach. And so like, it's, I don't know. It's not that I'm not confident in my coaching ability, but it's just like, I know that I'm not all in with those people in that way. Like I want you more than anything to move better and to lift more weight. But I know that a coach that encompasses everything that a coach should be, I'm not really that. So I'll be a specialist. I'll be a specialist coach, I guess, if that's the way you want to put it. But I first, I guess, considered it when I was training for the Olympics in 2008. And my coach, Richard, who I had told you guys about, I was living in Texas at the time. So I was driving about 3 hours to see him every other weekend or so to train. And he had just started coaching weightlifting classes at a CrossFit gym. CrossFit had been around for a little while then, but one of the first ones in Texas, maybe the first one, CrossFit Plano. I don't know if you guys remember.
Absolutely.
Ever going to that, but back in 2008. And so I went there a couple of times. And the first time I went there, I remember walking up to the space and, you know, I could see inside. And I could see a group of people doing what I'm still thinking might have been a snatch.
Sounds like I could have been in that group.
It was some sort of ground overhead, that's for sure.
Ground overhead.
But so I walk in and you know, they're doing their class, and I don't still know what CrossFit really is or anything else. But I go over to the platforms and we start warming up, and my workout's like, you know, because I was resting way more back then than I do now in between sets. So I was like 2.5 hours long, and, you know, just people coming in and out. There were a couple of people that were in that first class that I was in that stuck around to watch me lift, to talk to Richard and ask him questions, and to talk to me and ask me questions. And so, I saw an interest in what I was doing at a level that I've never really known before that day. And an eagerness to know what I was doing and to learn from me and from Richard. And from that day changed my life for sure, because I was like, I left that day knowing that I was going to try to get into this community in some way at some point. Now, I was still focused on my own lifting. So, you know, didn't know any steps that I would take, but I was like, I remember thinking on my drive home that day, maybe in a year or two, I'm going to start asking CrossFit gyms in my area if I can teach some weightlifting classes. I remember thinking that for the first time. Still didn't really, you know, want to be a coach necessarily, but I knew that there was maybe an opportunity there. And I didn't have really, I didn't know any other skills that I would have. I didn't even know if I was going to be a good coach. But I think I understood that I had an aptitude for it probably with some of my first sessions. I mean, just, I mean, whether I did or I didn't, I told myself I did, you know, like, I don't know how good of a job I really did, but I told myself that, and maybe it was just that I enjoyed it. Maybe it was just that I enjoyed it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I'm going to find a way to be good at it, you know?
Well, there's no shortage of there being a need for talented Olympic lifting coaches. So you're in the right place. Boz, I know if you get a punch out, brother, just let us know.
Yeah, I've got to head out. Hey, Chad, it's a real pleasure seeing you. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. And I hope the listeners find as much value in this as I did. I will check you guys later.
Absolutely, man. It was a pleasure. Brother, good to see you.
Chad, I just got one or two more for you and then let you get on with your day. Number one, this might be a great lead-in because, like you said, you saw something which potentially looked like a snatch, maybe some sort of distant cousin of the snatch.
Yeah.
And no one has ever accused me of being a beautiful Olympic lifter. That's for sure. But what is your, one of the hot topics is, right? It's correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that in the world of classic Olympic weightlifting and high rep at a max heart rate is not something that is common, embraced, brings smiles to the crowd. It's quite the opposite. And that is very much, happens frequently in the CrossFit world. So I guess what's your take on high rep Olympic lifting with regards to people trying to, improve their fitness?
From day one, I didn't have an issue with it at all. I didn't walk up on that class and be like, oh, that's terrible. They should not be doing that. Because again, I was one excited that there were people doing Olympic. There was people doing Olympic.
I expected you to say, okay, all right, cool.
And then when I had conversations with some of those people and they were asking questions and watching me lift and everything else like that, like I saw that interest in an eagerness. And that's why I said, it wasn't a turnoff for me. It was a turnoff because I was like, okay, I can actually help them. I can actually help them learn how to move better and all these things. And so I never had a problem with it. I guess if I would say I have an issue with it, is through the years, just knowing that people think that it has to be different. Like, oh no, I have to move this way so I can move faster. No, I have to round my back. I have to do a rounded back Romanian deadlift muscle snatch on every rep so I can get a better right. time. And that's not the case. Like I know that because I do a lot of CrossFit. Now don't get me wrong. I think that snatches and clean and jerks in wads are probably about the hardest thing you can do because you're moving weight and it's complex movement. It's
sure.
like people think it's easy for me. It's difficult. It's probably the most difficult thing for me to do as far as like what one of the most difficult things as far as what gets my breath the quickest. But under that level of fatigue, guess how I move? The exact same.
Yes.
So I'm not losing my back tension. I'm keeping my technique. I could name off all these things that I'm doing that are the same as what I do when I lift heavy. So, and to be fair, let me just give you when I was pushing CrossFit, I wasn't pushing CrossFit really any harder than I do now, but I was doing a ton of CrossFit back in the day, back when there was all these barbells for boobs events going on and Grace, right?
Yeah.
So I worked into the ability to do Grace. I think I did my best Grace time was somewhere under a minute 30 seconds. Okay.
Ooh, that's going to get it now, done.
I did that with no touch and go.
No kidding.
One rep after the other. Just boom, boom,
that's,
boom.
Didn't you're stop, cooking fast down. Singles there.
Had a bar that wasn't bouncing.
Yeah.
Now, I'll give you that. It wasn't bouncing all over the place. It just died. But that was no touch and go. So very fast. And maybe it's was somewhere around 1:30. I can't guarantee you. It was definitely well under 2 minutes. I'll say that for sure. But I remember doing that time. It was my best Grace time ever and no touch and go. But again, every single rep was the same. And I say that because I'm trying to express like, yeah, I'm not a good CrossFitter. I breathe hard faster than most people, but I actually was able to put up that time that's very good, under those circumstances, and every single rep was the same. So there's efficiency there.
There's efficiency there. And, you know, I think it's also, there's a couple things on it. And my thought process has evolved over the years as well. You know, sometimes looking back, you just don't know what you don't know. You know, I think there's also a big difference between sport and the recreational athlete. You know, if you are, if this next clean and jerk, if you're in the final heat at the games or at the whenever, and it's down to this, and if you lock out, you know, 225 over your head before this person does, there's a difference of $300,000 on the line. You're probably going to be willing to pull that lift a little sooner than you should. Yeah. If you think you're going to somehow stand that sucker up, the crowd will go, oh, geez, that was ugly. And you're like, cha-ching, cash that check.
Yeah.
If you're in your garage and you're an accountant at H&R Block, just trying to live a long, healthy life and not trash your knees, back, and shoulders, you know, I don't deal with the sporting side of it. I deal with real, you know, real people, real lives and stuff. My just general advice is, whatever the movement is in the workout, power lift, Olympic lift, calisthenics, it doesn't matter. Like, don't ever move faster than you can move properly. It's just that simple. It just don't ever move faster than you can move properly. If you're not ready to pull that barbell off the ground again, it doesn't matter that the clock is continuing to run and you're going to be 15 seconds slower in the workout. Wait the fit, like pull it when you're ready. And I guarantee, like, when you're ready, that doesn't mean that your breathing rate has come down to, like, you know, 60 beats a minute. You're still going to be plenty fatigued. It's plenty strenuous. Yeah. You're like, you're not going to feel short change. You're just going to hopefully, because like you said, you might lift poorly and move poorly your whole life and never have an injury. Totally true. We all know those people that defy the odds. But if you're asking me what's going to set myself up, how can I stack the deck the greatest in my favor? That's going to be moving well. Like, and that's it. And, you know, it's not worth it for the recreational athlete. There's no prize purse. You're not going to lose any sponsors. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, just move as fast as you can move well. And if you need to take a little break, that's okay. Take a little break. And the touch and go thing you said, if you did Grace with all singles, is I'll frequently get asked on something like this, like, well, do they have to be unbroken? Like, it's, you know, five rounds and there's five clean and jerks per round. Do they have to be unbroken?
Yeah.
Like, well, first of all, no, there are no rules that are that rigid. I mean, the benefit of the clean and jerk is the technical complexity, the power produced, the explosion, the quarter extremity movement. Like, and I always just tell people, like, some people's bodies and their joints and whatever they've been through in life, lowering heavy load might feel totally fine to you. Like, it just doesn't bother you at all. And there are other people who are like, oh, when I lower down 135, it feels awful. There's your answer. Just drop it. Like, it's that simple. You don't have to do touch and go. And so I think a lot of people just have become rigidly fixated into how they ever happen to see their first favorite athlete do the workout. Well, they did touch and go, so I have to. It's like, those rules don't exist. You're always authorized to make the best decision for what you have going on your fitness journey with your body, with your athletic ability, and somebody else, they're on a different journey. Get some inspiration from them, get fired up if you want from that load, but don't feel some terrible pressure to compare yourself to their journey, because that's probably going to go wrong more times than it's going to go right.
Right. Well, with touch and go, I will say that one, I mean, if you can do it and you're efficient with it, great. Yeah, by all means, do it. Like you said, if it's comfortable and you've practiced it, maybe under, like, I would have people practice when I was coaching more CrossFit, like making them pause in certain positions and making them touch in certain positions so that they end up in a better position. Because what happens, one, whether you're doing it correctly or not, when you're lowering the weight, it's more energy consuming.
Yes, sir.
You're doing not quite double the work, but you're doing more work than just singles. Also, most people just don't have an idea how to do it most efficiently. So it's going to pull you out of position. So if it's going to pull you out of position, then you're better off dropping it and resetting and going again. And you're going to be more efficient in the long run that way.
And you know what people might be able to do, like the casual CrossFitter, is like, there's a lot of people who would have a very similar experience to yourself, where if they had the good plates that just came to a dead stop, right? They didn't bounce and they did fast singles. There's a lot of people that would achieve their best grace time that way. And I think what can get into some CrossFitters, what can get into CrossFitters' heads is all that matters is the clock. And it's like, okay, you know, to a degree, but like you're saying, there's also tremendous value in like, hey, next time grace comes up, you just did a smoking fast grace. You did all singles. That's great. You know what you're going to do today? You're going to do grace, but you have to, you know, because it doesn't cause you pain. You're going to do grace as 6 sets of 5 touch and goes. And if you have to, whatever time you have to rest, if it's 30 seconds between each one of those, you can't grab the bar again until you feel ready to do 5 touch and goes. And maybe the last grace you did was 2 minutes. And today you come in at 4 minutes and 15 seconds because you had to take those rests to get ready for sets of 5 each time. I think too many CrossFitters would see that as a failure. That was a bad training session because it was twice as slow as my last grace. And it's like, I think that also is a good mindset for people to break. It's like, it wasn't better or worse. It was just different. You just exposed yourself to something you don't normally expose yourself to. You still did 30 clean and jerks. Like, there's a tremendous amount of value, and you did it in a way that you don't normally do. That's a win in the gym. That's not a loss, regardless of what the clock says. But that darn clock,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you still did, like you said, you still did all those reps, and that's the big thing for me at this point in my life is just getting in work and just getting in reps. But I wanted to backtrack real quick before we get off here. And you talked about how if you're a games level athlete, for example, if you're going to break form or your back is going to round or whatever, and you're going to get a faster time, you know what? So be it. Like, yes, I tried to be, you know, more strict with those level of athletes in the past, and it just really doesn't make sense. But what I will say to that is, like, I hope that they're spending some time doing things correctly.
Sure.
And what I want to say to the more recreational athlete, like, if you can't wrap your mind around going slow enough or lifting light enough or whatever, or modifying enough to do it quote unquote correctly, then one way that you can look at it is, let your breaking in form or your backgrounding be somewhat of a treat. And what I mean by that is, like, okay, if you commit to 3 weeks or 4 weeks or a cycle of some sort of CrossFit programming or weightlifting programming where you're strict with your movement, and then you want to go test Fran or whatever the named workout is,
sure,
you know, 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks down the road, and you're not going to worry about your movement, by all means, you earned the right to do that at that point to me. So maybe give yourself that treat where you say, okay, I'm going to relax my mind and not worry about this, because really that kind of thing kind of happens in weightlifting a lot, where we train, we're going through the cycle. And for athletes that are still more so under development and not competing at a high level, like, I'm going to be strict with your movement. We're going to drill, take things easy, but you're still going to do this competition because you're going to get value from that competition in many different ways. Mm-hmm. And so at the competition, we'll turn you loose. If you break in form a little bit, like, yeah, I'm not trying to make you unsafe, but we're not going to worry too much about that. We're going to see what you do under stress in this competition. How much of what we worked on do you maintain? And that can be telling for them, for me, and it can be telling for you as well, if you allow yourself those days every now and then.
You know, and truth be told, in the realm of CrossFit, you know, while I gave that example, I'm sure if we went back and got some footage, you could certainly see some people that finished in a less than ideal manner and made it happen. But the other side is totally true. Mm-hmm. There are countless examples of people who have more gold medals than you can count, and they move well. I mean, Rich Froning is a great mover. Mm-hmm. Matt Fraser was a great mover. Ben Smith was a fantastic mover. All of those people, even under fatigue, moved so well, and they won. I mean, so it's most certainly possible, you know, but you see
efficient
in sports, you see the whole gamut, you know, when it's out there. But man, I hope that, first of all, thank you very much for being so generous with your time. I really hope that people enjoy this episode. I know that they are absolutely crazy and nuts about the Olympic lifts. They love the clean and jerk and the snatch. So we thank you for that. And what I should say that I forget to say all the time is, if you want to check out what helps support the show, go to variednotrandom.com, check out some of the cycles that we offer. If you own a gym and you want workout tracking and gym management and billing all on the same platform, BTWB has you covered. You can get yourself on the wait list. Go to btwb.com/all-in-one, and you can do that for anyone who owns a gym out there. Doesn't need to be a CrossFit gym. Chad, for you, how can people find out about you, you know, get in contact with you? Maybe they'd like to get some coaching and some training from you. Where can they find you?
The easiest place, if you want to contact me with questions or, you know, want to know more about any of my services, is just a message on Instagram. It's just at Ollie Chad, OlyChad. And that kind of, those messages are always notifying me on my phone. So, and I can kind of just direct you from there. That would be the easiest way.
Okay. Well, thanks, brother. I genuinely appreciate it. And again, I hope everybody enjoyed this one. For Chad Vaughn and Adrian Bosman, I'm Pat Sherwood, and we will see you next time.